Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Titus, what happened on that cruise?
I did the worst thing any human being can do. I ate Dionne Warwick.
What?
What?
I ate Grammy Award winner Dionne Warwick!
Who hasn't?
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 156 for the week of May 22nd, 2017. I am cannibal singer David T. Cole, and I'm here with Eli Manning clone Sarah D. Bunting.
Toyoga!
Febreze abuser Tara Ariano.
Just spray it, it's light cleaning.
And beach ball shoe John Ramos.
I think I know more about Dionne Warwick than you do.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Extra Hot Great. Joining us this week is our old friend John Ramos. Hello, John.
Hello, everyone.
Yay! We are here to talk about the first season, the latest season of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt on Netflix. That would be season 3. Should we first say the site business that Dave is dead or dying or something?
So you guys know what Kinder Eggs are, right? So it's like a chocolate shell, and then inside that it's a white chocolate shell, and then inside that there's a prize. So if my head is the chocolate shell,
right?
It feels like the white shell inside of the chocolate is spinning in one direction, and then the prize is spinning in the opposite direction inside of that. Or if you want to, you ever see those, the ball of death where the two motorcyclists fly around inside of a metal ball? It feels like that, except it's in my head and I can't get rid of it and I feel like I'm going to pass out. So I'll be here. I may not be present. I also wanted to say, because it's all the buzz, if you came here because I tweeted something about Twin Peaks, I don't know if I'm going to get to it this week because of that. So maybe the Twin Peaks discussion will get pushed till next week.
Well, why don't you take a little nap, and okay, when we get to Around the Dial, we'll wake you up and you can talk about
Thank you.
Hello, everybody other than Dave.
Hello.
Hi. How much of the season did everybody watch? We watched all of it.
I skipped around.
I watched the first three.
Oh, okay.
I watched the first three and then the Leota-sode, because Leota.
Ah, sure.
Uh-huh.
Well, there's another one of your beloved guest stars is coming up toward the end of the season. I don't know if you got that far, though. It's related to Russ, to Jacqueline's husband, fiancé husband.
Oh, okay. No, I did not get that far.
Oh, you in for something? All right. Well, I'll start by saying this show, I have to say, makes me laugh more than almost any other sitcom on television right now. But I am troubled by the fact that in season 2 and season 3, they seem to have felt the need to put in one episode that like aggressively pushes back against a very cartoony idea of political correctness. Last year, it was the Titus's one-man show where he plays a geisha, of which the less said the better. And this season it would be the college party one where there's a lot of joking about consent that really rubbed me the wrong way. But now I don't know if that was so far in the season that either of you didn't watch it. Is that the case?
That's correct. Yeah,
that is also correct. John and I, all on the phone regarding another matter, more of which later, talked a little bit about the show and how it, John, for you, it was getting off to a slow start. Did it ever catch fire for you, or it doesn't sound like it did?
Well, so last season, I definitely thought the back six were so much stronger than the front for, you know, I think reasons that people have discussed or really got. It managed to get into Kimmy's pathos a little bit without losing its funny edge. And Tina Fey was so good as her therapist.
Yeah.
And like the first three episodes now, I just feel like have been in this cul-de-sac where is Kimmy going to college? Will she have the money for college? At the end of episode three, she spent the whole time taking care of Laura Dern and she's back to where she started at the beginning of the season. And I don't really get the narrative point.
Yeah.
Jon Hamm, much as I love him, does not need to be on the show anymore, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that whole thing is, I mean, whatever. I'm sorry.
It's just weird, I think.
Problematic again, but it's like, you know, now that you've decided to actually try at times to take it seriously, that she was a kidnapping victim, like, then you kind of can't go back and make it, like, their fights were funny, but then I felt weird about laughing at it because it's like, I think that's burnt. Like, I think making it hilarious that she lived in a bunker and was, you know, not consenting is like, you can't really put that toothpaste back in the tube. And also, yeah, like Hamm is just sort of like, I don't know, it's not necessary. And there's other like surreal stuff that they could be doing that isn't quite so blithe about the premise of the show, mm-hmm. which they should just kind of not look at anymore, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It would have bothered me less too, I think, if the other subplots have distracted me more, but the Redskins thing, I feel like, has run out of steam. And Titus and Mikey kind of closed up shop, even though I love that relationship and I assume it's probably not over, but for now it just seems like it is. And I don't know. It's just not grabbing me the way it used to, I guess. I did really like in episode three, Titus's and Kimmy's interactions because they'd been basically separated the first two episodes, but that wasn't enough for me to like really dive into the episodes, the rest of the episodes that we had.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Well, they do get some more funny stuff about bringing back the other mole women. There's a Gretchen episode, which I think is after the ones that you guys watched. And Cindy comes back too later in the season.
The Gretchen episode from last season was the only one of the first six that I thought was good, actually. So,
Improves on that one. It's also problematic in weird ways, but not in it handles it better, I would say, than the Kimmy college party episode that some of people who are listening to this may have already seen. I don't know, Dave. What did you think?
I thought this season was more of like Titus's season, actually. They seem to be focusing a lot on him. He has this whole arc, which I thought was great, the mahogany play arc and what happened on this cruise that he went on, and it sort of culminates in the best episode of the season, which is one from the clip at the start, which was the one with Dionne Warwick as played by
Maya Rudolph.
Was sort of, for me, like last year's fake tape song episode. Just sort of like kind of a marquee, a little, you know, gimmicky, but was pretty strong. And I just thought like the overall arc of this season was actually with like the strongest one anyways, was Titus's, more so than Kimmy's, more so than Carol Kane character's arc with the Big Naturals owner guy. I think like after the success of the song from season two, I'm drawing a blank. Pinot Noir and everything, like there was a temptation there to like double down on that, but I don't feel like they did. I feel like they just kind of maintained what they were doing this season. Titus is, I guess, you know, if he's gonna have a song a season, this one is California boobs are the best boobs around.
California.
Which was pretty great. That whole arc was great too. So I enjoyed the season quite a bit on that front, on the Titus front. Totally right on the, you know, Tina Fey seems to do this every, like, she has a cycle like every 18 months. She has some product or something in the press where she goes,
I'm not apologizing for jokes or whatever. Yeah.
And it seems to bear fruit in this show, which, you know, whatever, her show, I guess. But Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't it it's so always weird? Like the one man play basically took on like the internet in a very Sorkin-y way.
Yeah.
Which, like, yeah. You'd think these two were like at the opposite ends of the room on that, but maybe not so much.
Right. I mean, there were legitimate complaints about the way the Jacqueline character is like the backstory of her as a native person. And taking it on that way as they did in that season two episode was like so tone deaf. And it's like, you know, it's okay to just say, you're right, I fucked up, rather than double down on your, you know, your dumb tweet of an episode or a, you know, a concept for
the,
a character.
And the reason why like Tina Fey will get double the backlash because she's so progressive on other things.
Right.
And then like, you know, taking out the question of, you know, can this be comedy? But it's just sort of like, well, okay, you're a champion of, you know, feminism, but you have these giant blind spots when it comes to, you know, A and B and C.
Right.
You know, it makes it sort of that much more cringy if you're leaning that way. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's sort of like an, you know, a bonus multiplier in pinball terms. Guys.
Yeah. Basically, the episode is about Kimmy going to her first college party. And there's all this stuff about like millennials needing to be coddled and stuff, which like I'm really done with that narrative. Like,
what's the deal with airline food?
Honestly, it's like at this point, it's that stupid and hacky and ill-considered where it's like everyone hates all of the generations around them. Like, see also Gen X with the baby boomers and the millennials. Like, it's not interesting. Let's just... Except that,
I mean, even millennials are not that young anymore, right?
Exactly. And millennials aren't even the ones who are in college now. The other thing, my other complaint about this season is that Devi Diggs, who I'm sure is great on Broadway, not a funny TV actor, not funny here, and not funny on Blackish, really weirdly awkward, I find.
And bad on SVU. So,
oh, yeah, bad on SVU also. I forgot he was there too.
Sorry, although.
Worst crime of all.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty hard to be a bad defense attorney, and sorry.
Yeah.
But, like, the best thing about the show to me is all the, like, little stuff stuffed in around the edges. Like, speaking of SVU, that one of her college brochures is from Hudson University, the most dangerous college on earth.
Yeah.
I love that. Oh, my God.
Or that they cast Harris Yulin as the dad. Mm-hmm. Like, of course. Like, they probably were like, well, let's get a Harris Yulin type. Well, let's just get Harris Yulin. Why settle for the type?
Didn't one of the pamphlets say, like, as seen on SVU or something like that? Or did I make that up?
I think so.
Yeah, it did. And it's the same sticker as from the, like, behind-the-scenes book. So they totally just, like, cut it off the book and pasted it on there, which is awesome. It's just the little things that sometimes the big things I'm sort of like sitting through so that I can get to more little things. Like, I just love that, Russ, is that the guy's name? David Cross?
Yeah.
Is like, he's in completely in a cast having been hit by a smart car. Like, that they double down on that.
Yeah.
Because, like, what's going to happen? Nothing to either you or the smart car, trust me. But yet he's in this like totally 50s Maxwell Smarty version of Traction with both his legs up and the cast and only the fingers sticking out to make Iktomi. And like just little things like when they're renaming the teams and one of them is raisins that you thought were chocolate chips. So it's like... I love you.
And when the sprinkler is fully on top of him and the guy goes to the meter and Jacqueline's like, it's Sunday, you're good.
I know. Which is probably what I would do and have done.
It felt very New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I like that about the show and the little, like, just those little bits. But that's a weird... I think this is where there's been some confusion for Tara in the past as to, like... why I like this show, that it's all that little throwaway stuff that it kind of acts like it's an animated comedy. Mm-hmm. But then the big stuff is always a little like, all right, like I love Titus. And my favorite thing about Titus is not the songs and it's not that he ate Dionne Warwick. It's their commitment to having him be with expired food in every scene. Just love it that he comes in with like the tub of mayo and his bits of business with like the whipped cream in that one episode. Like he's really good. And
There's an episode later on in the season that totally revolves around. Oh, you saw it. There's a Ray Liotta the episode.
Yeah,
yes,
just trying to use the toilet in the bodega.
Yeah.
Which, what bodega has a restroom for the pub?
Well, they don't. They say it's a gas station. They oh, okay. they make sure to say that yeah. to explain why it even has a bathroom. Yeah. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. They get the little teeny fiddly details so right that I, you know, the longer it goes on, the more I think this could be a 15-minute Adult Swim show and it would be stronger because the plot stuff is so beside the point and it's all the like the little jokes that it just wants to sneak in for, you know, the writers sneak in for each other. It sometimes feels like that when you catch them, you're, you know, you feel like you're in on something. So yeah, I agree. It's not always great on plot, better on cramming in lots and lots and lots of jokes.
I'll keep watching it too. I'll keep watching the season and it always makes me laugh. And if Titus is the focus, I'm actually fine with that. Just the first three episodes, just kind of like, I was just like, I feel like I just ran in a circle.
Yeah. There's a very funny one coming up for you where he and Josh Charles face off against each other at Jacqueline's apartment.
Oh my God.
That is very well done. Yeah. I thought that was one of my favorite ones. And it also has a callback to 30 Rock that I was like, did I just hear that? And then I say it again. So look out for that one too.
I will.
I'm not quite the shepherd I used to be.
All right. I wanted to talk about the Dirty Dancing remake on ABC, which if you're listening to this podcast, the day it drops is airing tonight for 3 hours. Doesn't
what?
That seem excessive and longer than the original
I
movie?
Was listening
yes.
To, I was listening to you watch it
uh-huh.
from the other room.
Yes.
And watch I the screener. Swear, I don't know if this is a spoiler, but they use the same song in the movie than, you know, I Have the Time of Your Life.
All of the songs are the same as in the movie.
Okay. But I swear they played it twice. It went on forever.
Oh, no. I backed it up because I took a Instagram video.
Okay, that explains it.
No. It's true. All of the music is the same. They're all covers of all of the songs that you know from the movie, plus for no reason all of the principals also get a song. All the principals, even Bruce Greenwood sings a song. It's so unnecessary.
What?
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
That's
Deborah Messing gets a song. Bruce Greenwood then later sings the same song again. Not even two
are any
her,
of
like,
the songs scenes from an Italian restaurant, because I think I know part of the reason that it drags on for three whole hours.
No, it's the way you no, they'll never they can't take that away from me. But yeah, oh, okay. I'll say the bad parts first, which is that also Sarah Hyland from Modern Family is a sister and she gets a song for no reason, which is Don't Think Twice, It's All Right, that song.
Naked pictures of someone?
I don't know. Anyway.
Guessing.
So they add a whole bunch of storylines about the other characters. Like the sister figures out that the waiter guy is sleazy way, way earlier on. And then sort of starts to have a relationship or a flirtation or something with the pianist from the house band who's black, so that's their, you know, socially relevant commentary there. Also the band leader is Billy Dee Williams, so if that's of interest to you, FYI. The parents have a whole story where their like marriage is on the rocks, which is like no one cares, no one is here for the fucking parents, especially when one of them is Deborah Messing. But
the other one is not Jerry Orbach anymore.
Exactly.
Bye,
girl. Exactly.
Maybe they can get the guy who got his eyes. No.
Or girl.
Speaking of extremely specific New York jokes. But the baby and Johnny story is exactly the same in every respect. It's like every beat of their story is identical to the movie. So that's a good choice. I mean, a lot of the dialogue even is the same, except they have her say, I carried his watermelon, which no. I carried a watermelon. We all know it. Jesus Christ. If you're going to like lift directly from the script, lift directly from the script. But so, you know, I guess the idea of this is that it's a Dirty Dancing for the next generation. But honestly, like the original Dirty Dancing is kind of perfect. It's hard to do a movie like that and do it well. And I watched it again probably the last time I watched it the whole way through was a few years ago, Sarah, when I wrote about it for Tomato Nation, where you had, you were having like a series of about summer movies.
Oh yeah. Summer movies. Sure.
Which that's the ultimate one in my opinion. And this will be fine for people who don't, for like kids, I guess, who I'm sure this is for, who don't want to watch a movie that is from 1988, even if it's set in the same period, because it's also set in the late 60s, same as the original. But it's fine. Like, if you like the first one, you'll probably like this one too. I wouldn't go out of my way to watch it, but if you watch it, you probably won't hate it. With one more exception, it does have a wraparound story where you find out sort of what happened to the couple after the events of the summer, and like no one needed to see that. Like, it should just end without you knowing, and then you can project whatever future you imagine for the two of them. Even in your conscious mind, you know these two aren't going to stay together. Having an epilogue that spells out, you know, precisely what did happen to them in New York City in 1975, which is where it ends, like it's very unnecessary and just more filigree, and there was no reason for it to be fattened out this long. But anyway, ABC, 8 p.m.
Anybody else thought you were going to say, and it has a rap song?
Oh, no.
Yes.
But She's Like the Wind is like...
bummed or relieved.
Well, I'm in the corner, I'm here to say.
No, but I will say the She's Like the Wind cover is like weirdly, vaguely like EDM-y. It's extremely strange and also anachronistic, just like all of those later edition songs were in the original movie. My plug is for our two new podcasts that launched this week. Logs, Coffee, and Bob, the Twin Peaks podcast, which we had to rename from our original title for reasons that someone else already had that title. And Wine with an H and Roses, the Bachelorette podcast. So you can find both of those at previously.tv/podcast. I know Logs, Coffee, and Bob is up on iTunes. Wine and Roses.
Everything is up everywhere.
Everything is up everywhere. So subscribe, like, follow on Twitter. Yeah, they'll be there for you all this season.
Okay, I want to talk about a show that I talked about last time and that I was looking forward to it at the time, but it's Angie Tribeca. It's aired 7 of 10 episodes. Guys, it's so dumb still. It's so, so funny. I mean, I told Sarah this when we were on that same phone call she mentioned earlier, but there's like the season opens with like in the cold open, they talk about a case that's going to lead them to Miami. Mm-hmm. And they do that trope where it's like, it's the beginning of the season. So, you know, you think they're going to go somewhere else. And they show this title card, Angie Tribeca, Miami. And then in Miami, they're like, they knock on the store. They're like, we're looking for this person. Oh, show the regular title card again. It's so dumb. I love it so much. God. The show is like, it's a weird deal maker for me, and that anyone who does it, I like more just for the fact that they've done it. They obviously like get the joke. On this season so far, we've had Jessica St. Clair, Natalie Portman, Ed Helms, Heather Graham, Jack McBrayer, Michelle Dockery, Lizzie Kaplan, Constance Zimmer, Jean Smart, and as a Hannibal Lecter analog, Chris Pine.
Yes.
So, yeah. Please watch it. It's so good. It's like, when we were talking about Kimmy Schmidt before, like, all those little things that Sarah said the show gets right, this show is all little things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no emotional arc, really. It's just funny all the time. So,
the best part of the season so far was the kid getting interrogated on the street by the cops.
This is the last night's
culminating
episode
in a punch to the gut.
That I think that just that's the most recent episode.
Yeah. That was
right?
Last night. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
That actually made me like double over laughing in the same way that you doubled over getting punched.
Yes. Mondays at 10:30 on TBS.
Yeah, 3 more episodes in the season. But honestly, you could watch 7 episodes in what would feel like 5 minutes. Yeah. It goes by that quickly. And for my plug, I just want to mention again, my water documentary, What Lies Upstream, looks like it will be available sometime later this year.
Woo.
And I also was on a recent episode of The Blotter Presents with Ms. Sarah D. Bunting, talking about a couple of Watts Riots documentaries that are available now. That was really, well, enjoyable. I wouldn't say fun necessarily because of subject matter, but very illuminating, and I was very glad to do it.
Oh,
yeah, that was a good one.
Glad to have you.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Speaking of true crime, on the recommendation of a Twitter follower of mine, Darren Broomfield, I flew to England to watch a scripted take from the BBC on the Rochdale sex ring case in the UK. It's called Three Girls. It aired, I believe, last week, 1 hour each over three nights. I've only watched the first hour. It is really not a fun sit. I've only gotten through the first episode because I also had to watch seven episodes of The Keepers and 4 hours of a Canadian true crime documentary, and I just had nothing left to give and had to go watch kittens online for like an hour. But Three Girls is really well done. The first 15 minutes in particular is very effective but not judgmental at showing and not telling you how it is that teen girls want to feel like a part of something, but then at the same time don't really want to feel anything sometimes, and can be vulnerable because of that to predators like Daddy, ugh, and his cohorts. It's shot really well. You can almost smell the like greasy bread and mildew in these flats, and the scene when Daddy's, "I've been buying you alcohol, underage girls, and now the bill is due." Ugh, it's horrifying, and you really don't see anything. You just hear grunting, and you see what his victim, Holly, is probably looking at as she shuts down to get through this assault. The woman playing Holly, Molly Windsor, is excellent. Her sort of honey monster, which is the term for like the girl that gets the other girls for these guys, is played by Rhea Zmitrowitz. I hope I pronounced that right. She's also excellent. This is not, this is one of those not enjoyable but worthwhile recommendations, but there we are. I'm not sure when, if at all, it will come to BBC America, but keep an eye out. And I'm pretty sure if you have the BBC app that it is available on that. Nice. My recommendation is cheerier. How could it not be? The phone call that John and I were referring to before, top secret, taking over the world. Not really. We're starting a Veronica Mars podcast. Yay. It's called Go Pirates, and you can hear that in early June. Stay tuned to this channel to hear more about it and when it drops its first episode.
All right, so let's put a pin in Twin Peaks and American Gods, which is and I wanted to talk about a common issue I had with both these series so far. We'll deal with that next week because I cannot even think right now, guys. So let's all relax with a hot scoop from Dan McEachern, who gave me this. You all remember about a month ago, we listened to the amazing Clam beer commercial. You guys remember?
Clams.
Yes. Right?
Turns out...
Stop bringing it up.
Clams.
It wasn't just an outlier. It actually is perhaps part of a 1970s trend. Let's listen to this one.
When you fish for tuna, you watch, you wait, and you make ready. Then you spot them.
Tuna!
And you better get them while they're running, because you get no second chance.
And right now, and all this macho boat stuff's happening right now. Guys running around, flinging stuff.
The gusto in the world's out there, and now is the time to get it. You only get one crack at life, so you look for all the gusto you can. The life you live, the work you do, even in the beer you drink. When you're out of Schlitz, you're out of beer.
Tuna!
If you have any seafood beer ads that I missed, please let me know. I'm interested in playing all of them on this podcast.
Grunion!
Oh, God.
Shrimp lager. Can we hear Nick Kroll and John Mulaney do a version of that commercial?
Mackerel! Oh. All right, everybody. It is time for the canon. Here is our user submission for this week, guys. It's Fringe.
I'm submitting the third episode of the third season of Fringe, The Plateau,
for the canon, because I believe it perfectly illustrates what made Fringe such a strong series. The show might have had a muddled season and, well, depending on who you're talking to, an ill-advised final year, but when it was at its best, it managed to reinvigorate the case of the week supernatural mystery in a way that hadn't been accomplished since The X-Files. What makes The Plateau itself so impressive is the way that it flits in and out of the series' larger mythology, building a singular, engrossing case of the week storyline that's still inextricably linked to the overall plot of the series. It's what Fringe did so well in its best years. It was a series that built episodes that weren't simply compelling in their own right, but were intriguing due to how they emerged from and commented upon the larger story being told. What that means for the third season of Fringe, at least in the early episodes, is that the hero of the story, Olivia, has been kidnapped and brainwashed by potentially nefarious figures from an alternate Earth. The doppelgangers of many of the main characters of the show have swapped her out for her own doppelganger in an effort to both infiltrate the Fringe division of the main Earth that we've followed all along, as well as to extract information from the Olivia that we know in an effort to fuel their own efforts against, well, I guess maybe the main Earth. It's a large mythology. It doesn't all have to make entire sense. Luckily, in this episode, there's a scene between Lance Reddick and John Noble that lays out kind of sort of their plans, and they somehow manage to take pedestrian dialogue and make it into actually engaging material. Well, I mean, it's not entirely engaging, but it's Lance Reddick and John Noble. I want to see them act against each other. That's good stuff. But now that the backstory's out of the way, the actual plot of the episode is worth talking about. It's mostly about a man named Milo, who used to be of a sub-average intelligence, but has been given drugs that have drastically increased his mental facility. He's now able to accurately estimate what's going to occur in the future. And for some reason, well, not for some reason, but he's using those abilities to kill people. And the reason for that is that his doctors and the people who have essentially created him are trying to take away the treatments that give him those preternatural abilities. And it's basically a perfectly Fringe plot in that it highlights the way that mankind is essentially driven to mess around with our basic nature, always trying to improve, change, alter, make better what already exists, and showcasing the ways that said tinkering can go horribly wrong. Milo's this perfect villain in that he's both sympathetic while also being evil. He's killing, and he probably shouldn't be doing that, but we also understand why he's been killing. And another part of the reason why this episode works so well is that it doesn't take long for the heroes to catch on to Milo. Lincoln Lee, who was badly hurt and is scarred up quite nicely in these episodes, or this episode particularly, quickly catches on to the ballpoint pen that Milo's been using to essentially trigger the chain reactions that cause these deaths, and that quickly leads the heroes on to catch on to Milo. Before long, Milo's been cornered isn't quite the right word for it, because he knows that Olivia and her partner are coming for him, but he's been tracked down, and Olivia, in the climax of the episode, is chasing after him. But, as the episode has nicely shown, Milo expects this. It uses a nice grid depiction where we see all of the possibilities that Milo has calculated out, but the one thing he hasn't accounted for is that Olivia is not of this Earth. And this loops back around to what I've described as the overall plot of the series fusing with the episodic plot. Milo expects Olivia to understand that when the air quality of Earth 2, which has been degrading, again because of the overall plot of the series, basically where if the air quality degrades, Olivia should know she needs to get a rebreather, but because ultimately Olivia is not from this earth. She doesn't know it, and she chases on anyway. And that causes her to both catch Milo and need to be ultimately rescued by her partner. But that moment is pretty much the key to the episode. The plot of the Monster of the Week hinges on a moment that only emerges from the overall mythology. And that's where Fringe was really at its best. It managed to tell compelling stories that were then refracted through the overall mythology of the series. And each season managed to find a way to kind of rejigger that dynamic. This one in particular using it to bounce between Earth 1 and Earth 2 to tell mysteries of the week with two very different Olivias. And that's some of the main reasons why I think that the plateau is worthy of and, you know, deserving of induction into the extra hot great canon.
Thank you. That was from Logan. Who wants to go first?
John, you're our guest. You picked this from our list. Why don't you go first?
Sure. before I get into my thoughts on the episode, I would like to give my shot at a log line for the episode, which is Canadian Ethan Hawke butterfly affects people to the same depth as at the beginning of Margaret.
That's funny. I call that guy Ethan Hawkish.
He did.
So it's interesting because Logan's description of the series, I think, is a very accurate summation of what made it a really good show. And my history is it's kind of funny because it's similar topics, but I've probably watched about the same percentage of Fringe as I did at the X-Files, which is probably about half broken up in different spots. So I'm pretty aware of the arc of the whole series, but I haven't seen everything. All that said, this episode honestly just doesn't really do it for me. Just going to put that out there right at the beginning. I feel like Milo, even though the actor gives a really good performance, he's really creepy. I don't think that arc really turns at all. There's no real twist for me that I found really surprising, especially in the context of this show. I've seen a lot of other mysteries of the week that really made me think or had some really emotional button on them that this didn't do for me. And I really don't think I like the pacey ex machina at the end.
Yes.
It felt soulmate-y in like the worst possible way. And honestly, too, like the part where she, that Logan mentioned, where she doesn't know about the air alert. It wasn't an interesting twist, but it really emphasized to me that this, her memory, it seemed really selective in what she remembered and didn't remember. It seemed very narratively convenient that that's something she didn't remember when.
Yeah.
Obviously, a bunch of memories had been very carefully implanted in her. So that I found problematic. I really liked, in my notes, I have burn victim Seth Gable is working for me. That's because all the Seth Gable's working for me. But yeah. It was really great to see Kirk Acevedo again, since he's dead in the original universe. But that did also emphasize one other problem to me, is that I think it's a little bit weird, especially at this point in the series, to pick for a canon episode one that takes place in the entirely in the alternate universe. And I know later on it's a little bit democratic between all three universes, I guess, that there end up being. But at this point, I feel like the alternate universe is the one that we know the least. And I don't think it's super indicative of the series, for me anyway. So while I really like the presentation, I don't think this episode is gonna get my vote.
All right, Sarah, do you want to go next?
I'd have to agree. This is weird. Like, I really enjoyed revisiting Fringe and for this canon presentation. Thank you, Logan. I was fine with Acid Crash, Seth Gable. I'm also not super mad at looking at Lance Reddick in tight black fatigues ever. it looked better on my floor. but I'm with John that, like, although this episode is typical of a lot of things the series does well that I kind of forgotten about, like that they were always really pretty elegant at expositioning you up to speed with the investigation and the conclusions they were drawing. And they do that here. The casting of the siblings I thought was excellent. They looked credibly like siblings. The sister is always enjoyable. Some of you may remember her from Hannibal. But I'm with John. Like, at the end of the day, you know, one of my canon criteria is, did I want to keep going and like watch another episode after this, which I did. Unfortunately, it's not available anywhere for free at the moment, so I didn't, because I'd like the show, but I'm cheap. But at the same time, like, the original universe, and particularly John Noble, not as a Alterna Walt, but yeah, the original, is one of the great, and like his many names for Astrid that he never remembers, and calls her Asterisk and stuff like that, which I love that. And then his cow and the Twizzlers. I mean, that those characters were sidelined for the whole episode. And then Pacey only shows up at the end to do this, like, you know, you're not crazy info dump. Is not great. Like, I don't think it's quite typical because of that. So I'm leaning no on this, just because I loved this other universe, but I think there were other episodes that balanced it better and therefore were more typical of the show. Tara.
This is a no for me, although thank you, Logan, of course, for the presentation. But for all the reasons that you guys said, that it takes place entirely in the other universe is weird and off model. The fact that Peter's only in it as some kind of weird apparition too. And I never, once this, cause I did a rewatch of this for previously.tv a couple of years ago. And what I liked in the early going was that they seemed like siblings. And so when it took this turn into them being a couple, like, it of course was inevitable because TV, but I really hated it. I hated them as a couple. And so having this sort of, as John said, this soulmatey overlay on the episode was dumb. But also, speaking of dumb, the fact that the butterfly effect event that kicks everything off in the cold open is a pen in the other Earth, like, the idea that there would just not be pens anymore is so dumb. Like, it's so self-consciously, like, what's the craziest thing we can do to make this world different? It's like the octagonal pieces of paper in Battlestar Galactica. Like, why would that ever happen? So stupid.
Yeah, I mean, most of their little tweaks to the alternative universe I enjoy. Mm-hmm. Like, I like looking for them, but yeah. I agree that is, like, too much and too pointed. Yeah.
And while we're up about the alternate universe too, how can you have an episode in there and not have the Amber? That's, like, the coolest thing about that universe.
Yeah. Anyway, Dave, what were you going to say about pens?
No, I was going to say cutting off the corners of pieces of paper probably employs quite a few people in the Battlestar Galactica universe. So, you know, let's make Caprica great again.
Yeah, but the pen thing is, like, if you give it the tiniest bit of thought, like are there not visual artists who are still using brushes? You know what I mean? Like, that a pen would go extinct is, like, it doesn't make sense.
So no vote for pens.
Yeah, no for pens. Also, what happened to Anna Torv? Like, she did this show and then she fell off the face of the Earth. Like,
I was thinking that too.
Is she in the other Earth? Because that's the only explanation.
Trapped in Amber.
Yeah, like, she was a good actor and very pretty. Like, it makes no sense that she would just not have a career after this, to me.
I mean, we're the only people who thought she was good.
I guess. Anyway, it's such a strange episode and not memorable. Like, when we got to the end of it, I was like, I guess? Like, I don't really, I to me, this is not even in, like, the top 10 episodes of Fringe. And I say that having, you know, watched all of them relatively recently, like, you know, within the last 3 years. So this is a no for me, but thank you, Logan, for this submission. Dave.
This show is like a big bowl of assorted Hershey Kisses. You know, when you buy like the plain kind and you have some caramels and you have the one with the almonds in the middle, you put them all in the bowl and you sit down and watch TV. So like, you know, they're good, but they're not great. You're always happy to have another one and you always have your favorite. And for me, like the favorite isn't the alternate universe caramel swirl. It's the almond ones. And you know, everybody has their favorite location for this show. This one is definitely is not mine. That said, this episode, I love the premise of this episode, like the whole butterfly effect, you know, butter side, let's call it butterfly effect murder mm-hmm. stuff is great. I love that concept. I'm just not crazy about the execution. And oh boy, sorry, lightheaded. I'm gonna make this short. And the other thing is no Walter, no vote.
Yeah, that I agree.
I mean, Walter
yeah.
is the soul of the show to me.
He is.
Like
without
Walter, the show becomes kind of not watchable.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That like neither version, they're both like alternate universe versions of my dad. Uh-huh. So yeah, there needs to be even in his evil guys needs to be more John Noble.
And shout out to the universe's craziest location cards, the 3D floating letters of stupidity, the dumbest thing about
font.
Fringe.
Sure.
Oh, JJ, you can always tell when JJ Abrams gets personal on his projects because it's always stuff like that. It's always overwrought. see, also, I'm sure he did the credits himself again for this one. The stretch font, the stretch Futura font, for where it actually says Fringe bugs the shit out of me every time I see it. Just like find a condensed version of the font. Don't stretch the Roman version of the font.
Oh, God. I know.
Font cop.
Dave's head is clearing.
All right.
Rage.
So it
Rage
sounds like
it.
This is going to be a cross the floor no, but let's make it official. I say no, Tara.
I say no also, but thank you.
Sarah.
excellent presentation, but come back to me with a William Bellisode. Until then, it's a no. Sorry.
And John Ramos.
I'll say no, but to soften the blow, I will say Lance Reddick is the best at side eye. Please give them all to him.
Yeah. Well then, Logan, we all thank you for your presentation, but we're sorry to tell you that Fringe Season 3, Episode 3, The Plateau, is hereby not inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Yup.
It is time for winner and loser of the week, and Tara has the winner.
To an aside loser, Bobby Moynihan and Vanessa Bayer both announced last week that they were leaving Saturday Night Live after long, very happy, fruitful, launching into movie and other careers Z times on the show, and also Sashir Zameda was leaving very quietly and weirdly, like under the radar. She, if you didn't know, you wouldn't know. There was a moment in the closing credits where she was hoisted up on the shoulders of a couple of her castmates, but like until I saw it on Instagram the next day, I didn't know that she was even leaving. So perfect, unfortunately, end to her weird tenure on the show where they never really knew what to do with her. So I'm sure she's on to bigger and better things. She has a stand-up special either out or coming out shortly. So she's very talented. She'll be fine. But yeah, SNL, once again, treating a woman of color badly. Who could have predicted it? Comma, everyone. Sarah.
this one's a little dated, but it's such classic A-Rod that I had to. It's A-Rod. Apparently at Upfronts last week for Fox Sports, he complained that Fox Sports does not pay as well as the Yankees. He didn't appear to be joking. It's just such a typically tone deaf, like, and you know, people nearby attempted to be like, ah, ha, ha, ha. And he was like, blink. I mean, the thing is, he's a good analyst. I listened to him in the booth with Joe Buck, unfortunately, for a Mets game recently. And the Mets are so terrible that unfortunately you have to take what joy you can from the commentary. And he's good. Like, I'm glad he's gainfully employed. Otherwise, I feel like he just turned into this Howard Hughes weirdo with like 300 TVs all tuned to MLB. but don't complain about your pay ever. You, when you're a dating J-Lo, like, get her to take you to dinner, weirdo. B, you're wearing a suit that costs more than my whole family, so shut the fuck up. And also, shut the fuck up and stop wearing weird pink lip tint and shut the fuck up. Okay, I'm done.
Gentlemen, to Weevil.
You know what time it is, guys?
Yep.
It's cave time. Here we are at the start of a new season. Yay. Today we are playing TV pilot announcements from Vendredi the Third, or perhaps Vendredi III. I'm not quite sure.
Who probably earned... Vendredi.
Vendredi.
That's French word for Friday.
Yeah. Quite. Why did I do it like that? I don't know.
Mercy.
Oh, no. No.
Guys, I'm trying so hard. He earns himself an extra credit, of course. Redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. In TV pilot announcements, you'll guess the TV show based on the opening line from the pilot episode.
Interesting.
Each question is worth 3 points. There's two hints available. First hint, name of the character who says the opening line.
Okay.
Second hint, first billed actor from IMDb for the show.
Okay.
All right. Not necessarily the person who, you know, said it.
Can we choose who we, which we want, or it's the character first?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do it.
All right. Makes sense?
Yes.
Let's throw it to Picky to see who's going to go first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. So, John, you're going first, followed by Sarah, then Tara. Are we ready to play the 57 question long TV pilot announcements?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
All right. Yes, sir. John Ramos, this is Michael Bluth. He's a good man.
Arrested Development.
That's good for 3 points. My name is Walter Hartwell White.
Breaking Bad.
You will agree, Data, that Starfleet's orders are difficult.
Star Trek The Next Generation?
I shoot Mr. Marlowe twice, severing jugulars and carotids. With near surgical precision, he will die watching me take what is his away from him. This is my design.
I didn't quite hear the name. Could you just repeat
Mr. Marlowe?
Marlowe?
Mr. Marlowe.
This is my design is the salient part anyway.
This is my design.
And just one point of order. If you guess and are wrong, your turn
You're
is
done.
Over, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I will take a hint, please.
All right. The character who said that is Will Graham.
I'm going to need hint too.
All right. That's Hugh Dancy is the first build on IMDb. Hugh Dancy.
What is that show? Yeah.
That's Hannibal.
Okay.
Sarah was... stuff.
Chewing her fingers.
Sorry,
off.
Sarah.
I'm not going to vamp anymore. Okay. Hello. Hello, friend. That's lame. Maybe I should give you a name, but that's a slippery slope. You're only in my head. We have to remember that.
Ah.
Ed, we have to remember that. I'm going to take the hint.
Okay. This is a voiceover, and the character is Elliot.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay, I'm going to need another hint.
All right. Rami Malek.
Oh, Jesus. Sorry, John. It's your triplet, Mr. Robot.
Good for 1 point. Spotted on the New Haven line, headed towards Manhattan, an eerily beautiful blonde.
Gossip Girl.
3 points. Okay, you guys are old enough. I'm going to tell you the story of Redacted.
I'm going to take a swing, How I Met Your Mother.
Good swing.
A bellwether in the field of obstetrics and gynecology, Maternity Hospital has set a new standard in the Midwest, the highest standard.
Hint.
Voice. It's just a voice, not a character. Going to say it's probably so from
some
a
random
film
or something.
Or something like that, yeah. You know, like...
Okay, well, the Midwestern part is throwing me off, so can I get the second hint?
Michael Sheen is your first build.
Masters of Sex?
Good for a point.
The hospital is where he works.
Man, I miss the 80s. Not exactly the parachute pants or the keytar solos. No, I miss how back then the world was still small.
Is this the Goldbergs?
It is Goldbergs.
Nice.
Wow.
Redacted. That's the name on the street for the Oswald Maximum Security Penitentiary.
Aw, Oz.
All right, big guy, you and me, we've never done this, but desperate times call for desperate measures. My name is Hank.
Hint.
Hank Moody.
Oh.
Hint.
Acting's greatest... Wait, history's greatest acting robot, David Duchovny. Oh, I promised myself I wouldn't vamp anymore, and I tried and it didn't work. Hank Moody.
Californication?
Here we go. Good morning. Many of you are halfway through your first week here at Greendale, and as Dean, I thought I would share a word of inspiration.
Community.
All right. Imitating E.T., I'll be the imitating E.T., that's stage direction. I'll be right here. I love this movie. This won the Oscar, didn't it?
Oh, God.
No idea. Hint.
Joey.
Damn it.
Joey said that.
I guess it's The Sopranos.
Oh, Jesus.
Close. It was Dawson's Creek.
Oh, that Joey.
Yeah.
I wasn't there the day Dr. Andrew Brown's life changed forever, but like most folks in Redacted, I've heard the story enough times to be able to tell it.
Oh, thanks, Picky. You owe me, everyone.
All right, bring us into a first score break. Dr. Green.
ER?
Yeah, ER. Okay, score break, please.
Okay, Sarah and John are tied with 9 each. I have 15. So, do they both get the multiplier because no one's in the lead and no one's behind?
No, then nobody gets
it. You mean the equalizer?
No.
No equalizer?
No equalizer. If one person can't benefit, we skip it.
All right.
So, back to John. Dear Sally, you should probably be sitting down for this.
Aw, thanks, Vicky. Makes me think of a parody article Sarah and I wrote several years ago. Felicity.
Correct. Sarah. So now Coach Long's got himself the only number one ranked football team in Texas, but he's got an ESPN news crew on his tail filming every second of the preseason.
I hope this is Friday Night Lights.
Please, Luke. Please, please, please.
I like the wine. Gilmore Girls.
That's question 19. A couple of questions ago was 17.
Spread Eagle spread retroactively.
McNeil calls me in to tell me I'm late. To John.
Yeah. Hint, please.
Adler.
Just Adler is the name of the character?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right. Hint.
All right. First build in this show is Hugh Laurie. Hugh Laurie.
House.
Ask Jax what we should do with Bambi. That's J-A-X. Ask Jax what we should do with Bambi.
Jax. Hint.
That was said by Dublin.
Hint.
Charlie Hunnam.
Oh, Sons of Anarchy?
Good for a point. Diane. 6:18 a.m. Room 315, Great Northern Hotel. Up here in Redacted. Slept pretty well. Oh, non-smoking room. No tobacco smell.
I thought you didn't want to talk about this, Dave. Yeah. Twin Peaks.
I'll talk about it next week. I like your poncho. My dad got me one in Guadalajara.
Your Hint.
Betty.
Betty. Hint.
Oh, boy. America Fiera.
Sorry.
No, I was thinking of the other Betty.
Ugly Betty.
I don't think we're going to run the table, if that's what you're asking.
Hint.
Sam Seaborn. Seaborn.
Oh, The West Wing.
2 points. You have an idea of how your life is going to work out. When I was a kid, all I did was watch romantic comedies in our living room while I did my homework.
Is this The Mindy Project?
It is.
Oh. Nice.
You must be Mr. and Mrs. Chan. So wonderful to finally meet you. John.
Hint.
Rebecca.
Hint.
Rachel Bloom, first build for this show.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Good for a point. Sarah D. Bunting, first day of school, strange city, new house, no friends, I'm psyched. First day of school, strange city, new house, no friends, I'm psyched.
Psyched.
First day of school.
Beverly Hills. Yeah, got it, Spinzy. Beverly Hills, 90210.
Correct. All right, bring us into our second score break. The new Millennium Edition Crown Superior Funeral Couch, sized to accommodate even the largest caskets, the XL500 offers your loved one the very latest in style and comfort.
6 feet under?
Correct. All right, scores, please.
Okay, John has 15, Sarah has 18, I have 27.
Okay, wow. Uh-oh. All right, so that means... John Ramos, you're on the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge. Woo! Zone. You must answer half of these mid-80s TV Trivial Pursuit questions right to get 2 points.
Good luck, John.
No, wait, 6 points, because that's the double the thing. So,
whoa.
Yeah. Oh, right, yeah.
Oh, yeah, true.
What century was Rocky Jones Space Ranger set in? You know, Rocky Jones Space Ranger. What century?
22nd.
Oh, 21st, guys.
Wow.
Our century. Mm. Hooray.
Oh.
Who resumed his career as a private investigator after his son, Hal, was murdered on a case?
I feel like I know this shit.
Go back to my house. Have snacks.
Barnaby Jones.
Yeah!
Unfair, but I'll take it.
What Western hero blows him away with a blunt line special? Western hero blows him away with a blunt line special. Blunt line is capitalized, so, and so is special. So,
that's not a bunt line?
Bunt, what'd I say?
Blunt line.
Oh, no, bunt. Yeah, no, bunt line.
Okay.
As in Ned.
UNT line. Okay, got it. I don't know.
Wyatt Earp. Wyatt Earp. Who survived when the Young and the Restless's Kay Chancellor purposely drove off a cliff with her ex-husband, Philip?
No
so
idea.
So Kay or Philip, that's your choice there.
Oh.
So you have
Kay.
Hey!
Hey!
All right, one of these last two. What kind of animals are Beaver Cleaver's pets, Smiley and Hoppy?
Rabbits.
Ooh, good guess. Frogs. All right.
Oh,
what was
it?
Who opened her variety shows by fielding questions from the audience?
Carol Burnett.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
You just netted yourself 6 delicious points.
Nice.
All right. Now we are in round two, a little harder according to Friday 3.
Yep.
I'm a longtime listener, first time caller. My problem began when I...
Hits, please.
All right. This is man number one, voiceover.
Oh.
Hint.
Kelsey Grammer.
Frasier. Frasier.
Thank you, John.
You, I don't know. You're Frasier. The game. They say a person either has what it takes to play or they don't. My mother was one of the greats. Me, on the other hand.
Hint.
Meredith.
Grey's Anatomy?
2 points.
Nice.
Nice job.
See the girl in the 2200 Chanel jacket now covered in Mountain Dew and disease? That's me, Zoe Hart.
Heart of Dixie.
I love politics. I've always loved politics. The game.
Hint.
Leslie, politics.
Yeah, no hint.
Amy Poehler.
Oh, dude. Parks and Rec.
Is that a scratch? Is it? Is that a scratch? Julia?
Scratch.
Is that a scratch? Is it? Is that a scratch? Julia?
Julia? Designing Women?
That's what I was thinking.
That was said by a character named Bailey. On Party of Five.
Party of
Five. I was
five.
Like Walking Dead.
When startled to consciousness, the human mind takes a few moments to orient, especially in strange surroundings. It is a temporary dysfunction instantly rectified by the sight of a familiar object.
Hint.
Sam's voice.
Quantum Leap.
2 points.
Hey.
Nice.
I'm
nice.
Never getting married. John Ramos, I'm never getting married.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hint.
John Ramos, future host of Go Pirates, I'm never getting married.
I'm sorry, you cut out a bit.
John Ramos, future host
yes.
of the podcast Go Pirates, I'm never getting yes. married.
That sounds like it could be Veronica Mars.
Well done. At this very moment
Thank
in
you.
The town. Oh, boy. French. At this very moment in the town of Coeur de Coeurs. C-O-E-U-R.
Coeur.
Coeur de Coeurs.
De Coeur.
Young Ned was 9 years, 27 weeks, 6 days, and 3 minutes old.
Hint.
Narrator.
Hint.
Lee Pace.
Your favorite.
Who the fuck?
Halt and Catch Fire is Lee Pace. It's not Halt and Catch Fire.
Fuck.
It's that show you hate. No, the other one.
Pushing Daisies. Pushing Daisies.
Pushing
Raisins.
My deal with the judge was $12 to hang this prick, not to get strung up next to him.
Hint.
Hangman.
Hint.
Hint. You need another hint, Tara?
Yes.
Another hint?
Yes.
I think Dave's offended.
Timothy. Off with his pants. Timothy Oliphant.
Justified.
A Deadwood.
Damn it!
That's why I thought he was mad, because it was Deadwood.
All right, back to John. Sydney. That's all. Sydney.
Alias?
3 points. Sarah. Yes. There's nothing to tell. He's just some guy I work with.
Hint.
Monica.
Friends.
2 points. You will be assimilated. Resistance is futile. You will be assimilated. Resistance is futile.
Stop.
Although it didn't sound like that in the show.
Is it Star Trek Deep Space Nine?
It is. Okay. That was Picard as the Borg. Picard. Yep. Borkard. Mm-hmm. He has a name, guys. I know it, but I'm still calling him Borkard.
Yes.
John Ramos. My name is Mike Burnaby. I was lead anchor of WNBC 5 o'clock news until I stepped away 5 years ago. The great thing is now I get to spend more time with my fam.
Hint.
Mike Burnaby, I'm going to guess.
Hints, please.
Michael J. Fox.
Vin City?
No, the Michael J. Fox show. Merry Christmas, funny. Sisters.
Call the Midwife?
Oh.
That's what I would have said.
Kimmy Schmidt.
Oh.
Oh, fuck.
The Other Sisters.
Hey, I'm Brad Chase from DC.
Hint?
Brad Chase.
Okay, hint.
James Spader.
Shark?
Austin Legal.
Spader! Speaking Woods. Shit. Damn it.
Or James Woods.
Yeah.
Hey, Uncle Phil. How are you doing? Hey, Uncle Phil. How are you doing? How are you doing?
Hint.
Will Hint, Smith. Will Fresh, Smith.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Aha, 2 points. Sure.
That would have been my cold guess.
Sure, we dance our asses off for 2 hours, and then 5 minutes from the end, they walk out and stand there and bring the house down.
Hint.
Michelle.
Hint.
Sutton Foster.
Funheads?
Bring us into our next score break. They say the key to being a successful writer is finding your voice.
Hint.
Carrie.
Oh, Sex in the City.
The Carrie Diaries. Gotcha!
Oh, you got me! Okay.
Oh,
I have 35 points. John has 31 points. Sarah has 20.
Not that many.
20-something.
Okay.
Sarah D. Bunting, here we go. What European country were Beau and Hope married in on Days of Our Lives?
It. I watched this wedding too. What European country?
Yeah.
France.
England. What short-lived ABC copy of Animal House featured four of the movie's veterans?
Delta House?
Hey!
What?
Nice.
Totally made that up. Wow. Sorry, continue.
That was good. What presidential hopeful made a cameo appearance on Cheers in 1986?
Dukakis?
Gary Hart.
Oh, that guy.
Right.
What soap stretched reality by featuring a 34-year-old virgin, Dr. Beth Correll?
Oh, Jesus. Dark Shadows.
The Edge of Night. All right, so you need these
two.
Oh,
fuck, the other one.
What war drama's central foursome tour North Africa in two jeeps mounted with machine guns?
I'm sorry, what was the beginning part of
What war drama's central foursome tour North Africa in two jeeps mounted with machine guns?
A team?
The Rat Patrol. All right, last question. What soap followed Dynasty on ABC from 1983 to 1985?
Oh. The Colbys?
Hotel. Hotel.
Oh.
All right, guys, this is the last round.
Okay.
Round three, the hardest of them all. According to Friday 3. How about a beer, Chief?
Cheers.
3 points.
Hey!
Tonight's the night. And it's going to happen again and again. Has to happen.
Hint.
Redacted. So that's a title character.
Oh, gosh.
Night. Hint.
Michael C. Hall.
Oh, Dexter.
I'm having contractions.
Hint.
Claire.
Hint.
Well, okay. First build on IMDb for this show is Jorge Garcia.
Oh, Lost?
Yeah. 1 point. I think you should start getting out of your house. I think it's time.
Oh.
Is this a really? Show or are you talking to
oh,
me?
Oh, I'm talking to John.
Okay.
Is this editorial commentary?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dan.
Roseanne?
Sports night. Sports night. How what many of you have been... How many of you have been watching Redacted since high school?
I'm going to dedicate this big swing to Mr. Joe Reed, Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
Yay! It's about time that piece of shit got someone something.
You want the truth? Please. At the end, we're all alone.
Hint.
Reese. On that's a voiceover from Reese.
Reese. Hint.
Jim Caviezel.
Person of interest?
Yeah. That's one for one point. People disappear all the time. Okay, John, your clue is people disappear all the time. Which was the clue before John disappeared on Skype for about 10 minutes. So thanks, universe.
What's that?
Are you going to leave that in?
Yeah.
I'll just take a guess. The X-Files?
Good guess.
Outlander.
Oh, Outlander.
Outlander.
I never would have gotten that.
All I ever wanted, I think, was to be safe. That's the funny thing, because I never chose the safe thing. I would try, somehow would always end up being unsafe.
And
Lily with two L's.
L's.
Like yes. With a total of three L's?
Oh, yeah, sorry. You know okay. What I mean.
Yes, I figured that. I will need another hint.
Wait
however.
A minute. One, two. There's four L's.
What?
It's Welsh, Welsh now. Seal Award.
what?
Seal Award.
Once it again?
Nice. Yes.
All right. Oh, bring us into a quick score break yep. Near at the end because mm-hmm. I want to make things interesting.
Okay.
All right, ladies, let's see some hustle out there.
Glee? Damn.
Close. Freaks and Geeks.
Oh,
that was
sure.
Set by Coach.
Okay.
All right. So that is score break time.
Okay. I have 37. John has 34. Sarah has 28.
All right. So Sarah D. Bunting.
Good luck, Bunty.
Who was the first U.S. newsman in the 70s to be granted an interview with Fidel Castro? May he rest in peace, guys. First U.S. newsman.
Peter Jennings?
Dan Rather. I'd rather be interviewing Castro.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. What sportscaster provided the first coverage of the terrorist attack at the 1972 Olympics?
Jim McKay?
No, good guess, but it is Howard Cosell.
Oh, of course.
Look
it was.
At all those dead athletes. Okay. What TV role did a horse named Wahama play? What TV Mr. role did Ed. A horse named Wahama play?
Mr. Ed.
Flicka. All right, got to get all these
fuck.
Right. What soap do brothers Adam and Stuart Chandler appear on?
She knows that one.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
All My Children?
Yay!
What was the shortest time a commercial could last on the three major U.S. networks in 1986? Shortest commercial allowed.
15 seconds.
Yay!
Very exciting.
Oh, God. Okay. Guys, this is a 50-50 question.
Oh, no. Good luck, Sarah.
What color is the chess knight on Paladin's calling card? Now think about it. What color is the chess knight? I'll let you know. It's either black or white.
I know the whole song, too.
Oh.
Shit. I feel like it's black.
No!
White.
No!
Paladins are good.
Sarah.
All right. So what are the scores again, please?
28-31-37
points. Okay. Will travel reads the card of a man.
Take my card. It has a white knight on it.
A girl without answers in a savage game time. Okay, continue.
I don't even know what that is.
Without
what is
me.
What is it?
It's a show.
I know, but it was like a detective show or something?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
I only know it from the Stand By Me version of the...
Same.
Yeah, okay. To John, your last question. Show circle, everybody.
Show circle, everybody?
Yep.
This Glee?
It is Glee, yep.
Nice!
Yeah. Like I said, it's been in the family for years. Are you sure?
Once more? I'm sorry.
Like I said, it's been in the families for years. Are you sure? And it gets cut off. Sarah is your hint.
Brothers and sisters?
Parenthood. Parenthood. Yeah. Last question. You've been my best friend for 20 years. I don't know what I would do without you. I literally would not want to live, but I don't have to think about that ever again because I get to spend the rest of my life with... Alex.
Oh, no. Hint?
Liza Koop.
Happy endings?
Yeah, yes, that is good for one point.
Oh, boy.
All right, final scores, please.
Happy for you.
Yeah, Sarah has 28, John has 37, I have 38.
Squeaked
it out. Oh, ow.
All right, that's it. Let's get out of here. Dave... Don't feel good.
Oh.
Now you have to ask yourself, was that better than having no episode at all? I don't know, but I can tell you this much.
Surprise, no minis this week, everybody.
Remember, I have David T. Golden on behalf of Tara Ariana.
Oh, I hate Dionne Warwick.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Make it quick, I'm on a horse.
And John Ramos.
Mahogany.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Sorry for my brain. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Great. No, I forgot to do everything. Oh, no, everything's wrong. Yeah.
What's salty and covers 70% of the earth?
The ocean.
Your butt. Warwick burn.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.